Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. First on the list is GNU Scientific Library, or GSL. I don't know a whole lot about this, just like GMP and GMM. Not really a maths person, but this seems really useful. There's quasi-random sequences, there's random distributions, statistics, histograms, differential equations, interpolation, sorting, permutations, vectors and matrices again. You name it, there's a bunch of different things here. So it's a library for maths. If you have things that you need to do that are more complex than plussing and minusing and multiplying and dividing, this is one of the libraries you could use. Of course, I've already talked about in previous episodes GMM and GMP, so those are other options. But I imagine that you would know what you were looking for were you to find yourself in a instance where you need advanced mathematical processes. Okay, so that was all I have to say about GSL. What I do have something to say about, certainly this is more in my within my realm of interest and expertise, is GStreamer. GStreamer is, and a bunch of GST plugin packages. So GStreamer, you've probably heard of it if you've been using Linux for a year or more. GStreamer comes up now and again because it is one of the packages that handles media playback. So you may have seen GStreamer pop up just as GStreamer, but you may have also seen or heard of maybe you've gotten an error on some other distribution that GST plugins aren't installed. And there's famously three plugin packages that are kind of the ones you hear about a lot, and those are the good, the bad, and the ugly. GST plugins good, GST plugins bad, GST plugins ugly. I don't actually see that GST plugins ugly is here, so maybe that's not a thing anymore, or maybe it just isn't shipping with Slackware. I don't know. Didn't look that part up. But GST plugins are as the name implies, plugins for a modular system for GStreamer. So let's just talk about GStreamer first, and then we'll kind of briefly mention why there need to be plugins. So GStreamer is a multimedia library, and its job is to get media streams from a source of a stream being generated to what is called a sink, S-I-N-K, like a kitchen sink, the sink which consumes that data stream. I find this terminology confusing slash baffling slash obscure. I don't understand why those are the terms. I don't understand why a sink is a consumer of data, but I'm sure there is a logic to it. I'm sure someone had an idea, but the important thing to sort of understand here is that GStreamer is taking data, a stream of media from a thing that is producing that stream, and it is sending it to something that consumes or utilizes that stream, which is different than saying it's taking a data stream from, say, a file and playing it on your speakers or playing it on your screen, because that's strictly speaking not what it's doing. GStreamer is taking the stream data and piping it to an application that wants to use that data for something. That something could be playback, it could be recording, it could be editing, could be any number of things, I guess, but mostly those three things that come to mind. Now, between those two places, the source and the sink, there can also be filters applied. In other words, on its way from a source to a sink, a stream could be modified. You could send it through a filter that removes all chroma values from the picture. You just get black and white, or you could send it through a filter that maximizes the volume or raises the volume, applies a gain to the volume. So now you've got something louder or something that takes the volume and then repeats, you know, takes a sample of the stream and then repeats that stream 0.25 seconds after the stream, again, after that has passed. So you've got like an echo effect and so on. You get the idea, a filter. So that's what GStreamer does. Source to sync with a filter in between. Now, the interesting thing about media files is that they have, or they can have, multiple streams in a file. Now, again, GStreamer isn't necessarily taking a media stream from a file. Quite possibly, it's taking a media stream from a webcam, a microphone, whatever. Something generating a stream, GStreamer can handle. But assuming for simplicity's sake, we're taking it from a file. Files can have multiple streams all in one file, all in one bucket. It would be like someone handing you a sheet of paper and you look at it and it's nothing but letters and numbers and it's just a big jumble of data. But then they hand you a pair of red tinted glasses and you put those on and it filters out a bunch of the letters and you can now read the text. You may have seen that as a kid, you know, like when you have secret code cracking things, you have a bunch of nonsense, but then you put the special filters over your eyes and suddenly you put the filter over the letters and suddenly everything in red is filtered out because you're wearing red glasses. And so now you can read the other part. And then you take those red glasses off, you put blue glasses on, and now different letters have vanished and you can read a completely different set of text. That's kind of what's going on in media files, or it can go on in media files. The media file can have data that, if decoded by something that knows what to look for, so something with the red glasses on, would play sound. And then there could be other data that, for something with the blue glasses on, it would play video. Or you could have two sound streams, one for English and one for Italian, and then the video. And you could have yet another stream for subtitles, and so on. So you can cram all that data into the same file. It's just data, right? Like, all you have to do is send it to something that knows what to do with the data, and suddenly it all makes sense. So for that, GStreamer can construct pipelines. When it encounters separate streams in a file, or it's being fed separate streams from different devices, it can formulate the data stream from one place to one thing, and then from another source to another sync, or from one source to two syncs, depending on the file, depending on the stream type, and so on. So that way you have sound playing through speakers and video playing on screen, because your application, of course, knows what to do with those pipelines. There's more terminology within GStreamer, but those are the absolute basics. No, actually, there's one more. There's a bus. The bus is, in this one, I love the bus term. It's not specific to GStreamer. It's something in audio a lot as well. And computing, I guess. But really, I don't see it as much in computing. But in audio and in GStreamer, it comes up a lot. So bus is, I guess, electronics as well. Anyway, a bus is a thing, just like in real life, a bus takes you from one street to another street. A bus is basically that in GStreamer. It carries messages that GStreamer needs to sort of convey to different parts of GStreamer. That data is carried over the bus data type. And that's sort of all we need to know for the real basics. So there's a great tutorial about GStreamer on the, I don't know what site this is, GStreamer probably, gstreamer.freedesktop.org. So it's a great tutorial. I highly recommend the whole series. It's really, really good. I mean, honestly, I think it's a good tutorial, even if you don't intend to. It kind of assumes that you're going to be programming in C, which I don't even think, I think this is a good tutorial, whether you're going to be programming in C, or even whether or not you're going to be programming in GStreamer. I feel like just running through this really helps you kind of internalize how all this digital media stuff might work. And it may not be exactly like this for everything, for all libraries, multimedia libraries. So some of it maybe wouldn't be useful, strictly speaking, if you were going to go program with, I don't know, some VLC libraries or something. But still, I think there's a lot. There's enough, it's still dealing with multimedia. Some of the terminology, some of the functions, that might be different. But it still gives you a good idea of sort of the theory behind it all. So it is only like, I don't know, 30 lines, let's say. And I think it's worth it. So we're going to step through it real quick. So the first line is hash include less than bracket GST slash GST dot H greater than bracket. So this just includes the key file that is required to use the GST libraries, which is the big GST header file, and that is located in user include slash gstream dash 1.0 slash GST slash GST.h, obviously. And if you look at that, file, it is just a bunch of includes of other GST header files. So there's GST binary, GST buffer, GST caps, GST clock, GST control source. And so, I mean, like, it's got to be like 50 lines of includes. And that's all GST, or basically all GST header is. So it's you're bringing in a bunch of things. You're bringing in most of GST when you include that line. And then we do our first function, which is int tutorial underscore main, parentheses int argc, comma, car, asterisk argv, square bracket, parentheses. Now, this is the argc, the argv, that's the count of the arguments and what those arguments are. And by arguments, I mean the things that people may have passed to the command that they'll use to launch this application, the options they may have passed to that. Now, this little demo application that was on the website, it doesn't have any arguments, but we're still including the int argc and int argv because by doing so, you allow your application to also benefit from any GStreamer options that the user might pass to the command. So that's why those are there, even though it doesn't seem like they would be necessary. They aren't strictly, but if you put them there, then you can get GStreamer options for free. All right, curly brace. GST, so we're opening the function now. GST element, asterisk pipeline, semicolon. GST bus, asterisk bus, semicolon. GST message, asterisk message, semicolon. This is building, this is specifying the components of our, of GStreamer. We've got a pipeline, we got a bus, and we got a message. We got the GST message subsystem that we can utilize for like error messages and so on. All right. Next is probably the most important line of the application is what the website calls it. It says this is the reason the tutorial exists practically. It's GST underscore init parentheses ampersand argc comma ampersand argv close parentheses close semicolon. So GST init is the thing that auto magically sort of creates the pipeline, like the map from the source to the sink. GST init is the thing that builds that for you, which is kind of a big deal because otherwise you would have to figure that out. And one of the real benefits of GStreamer is that you don't have to figure that out. Your user can set their application to play sound on their speaker, and when they start GStreamer playing the video through their application, everything just works. It gets the stream is directed and conveyed correctly to the application. The application sends it to their speaker. Everything's fine. So that's GST underscore init. It's a big function, and we didn't have to do any thinking about it whatsoever. So we're 8 lines into this application so far, or this code so far. Pipeline equals GST underscore parse underscore launch parentheses quote playbin playbin, that's like play binary URI equals, and in this case they just use a Syntel trailer, so from the Blender group, https://gstreamer.freedesktop.org/data/media/syntel_trailer-480p.webm close quote comma null close parentheses, close semicolon. So again, for free, you don't have to worry about the networking. You don't have to do anything. All you're saying is play this binary stream from this location, and you're handing it a networked location, an SSL network location, and it, believe it or not, it just works. So this is a big deal. All right, so line, depending on how we break things down, this would be line 10, GST underscore element underscore set underscore state parentheses pipeline comma GST underscore state underscore playing close parentheses close semicolon. So you can kind of probably figure that it's going to autoplay, right? Because we're setting the state of the GST element to playing. So when we've gotten our pipeline up, then play. Next is bus equals GST underscore element underscore get underscore bus parentheses pipeline close parentheses semicolon message equals GST underscore bus underscore timed underscore pop underscore filtered parentheses bus comma GST underscore clock underscore time underscore none comma GST underscore message underscore error pipe GST underscore message underscore EOS, that's end of stream parentheses semicolon. So we're waiting for either something to error out or something to end the stream. There are better ways to do error messages, and under the circumstances, I'd almost be inclined to just skip over it, but they do have one, and I'll just read it really quick. It's if parentheses GST underscore message underscore type parentheses message equals equals GST underscore message error, then, or rather curly brace, G underscore error, that's a glib function, parentheses, quote, an error occurred, rerun with, or is G underscore, yeah, G underscore is glib, an error occurred, rerun with GST debug, blah, 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 close parentheses, semicolon, close bracket. So there's an error message. There are better ways to handle that, obviously, rather than just sending an error to the user. But for this demo, that's the easiest way to have an error response. Okay, so we've only got about 10 more lines to go, maybe, and they're short ones. So now we're assuming at this point that the stream is over. So when we're done with everything, we can do GST underscore message underscore unref parentheses MSG close parentheses semicolon, freeing that up, GST underscore object underscore unref parentheses bus close parentheses semicolon GST underscore element underscore set underscore state parentheses pipeline comma GST underscore state underscore null close parentheses semicolon. So we are saying that the stream is set, the state is null now. GST underscore object underscore unref pipeline semicolon return zero semicolon close curly brace, and that's it. That's the function. That's the main function of this application. And then really the only thing left to do are the three final lines, which is just int space main space, again, int argc car argv, open the function with a curly brace, return tutorial underscore main. That's of course the function that we just closed, right? That's the function, argc comma argv, and then close int main. And that's it. It's about 27 lines of code. Now, if I go back to the folder where this lives, you can try to compile this. Don't try this because it won't work. You can try to compile it as one might normally try to compile something, GCC basic tutorial.c, and then hit return, and it'll fail. It won't find GST GSTH. So you might think, well, I'll just include GST.h then. I'll specify where that is. You do dash capital I slash USR slash include slash GStreamer dash 1.0 slash GST. Well, that wouldn't work either, because then GST.h can't find GST slash GST config or glib config or something like that, or compat.h. In short, you'll spend an hour trying to compile this thing and it won't compile, and then you'll realize that you haven't followed instructions. So it does say compile, but it says compile as described in installing on Linux. If you go read installing on Linux, at the bottom of that, of how to install GStreamer, there's a note about issuing this specific command package config, and if you don't do that, then you have to do it in your compile command, for whatever reason, by default, it will not compile correctly. But if you reference that package config command in your compiling, command, then you're fine. I don't understand why that's necessary, because like I say, I tried the package config command and I thought that it worked, or rather I thought that it was reporting things that made sense, but apparently not. So the thing that you need to do is gcc space basic tutorial.c or whatever you called it. I just called mine basic.c dash o, and I'll just call it my player dot, or no, just my player is what I'll call it. And then $ parentheses pkg dash config dash dash cflags dash dash libs gstreamer dash 1.0 close parentheses. Do that, and it compiles really, really fast. I mean, it's a really, really simple application. 27 lines or something I said. And it doesn't have anything. I mean, it's you'll see. So then if I do my player, then Syntel starts playing straight off of the internet. It's really crazy. You're just streaming right off the internet, just instantly, right there. I mean, granted, the player that you've just written is a really complex way to watch a trailer, but it works, and it works exactly as expected, and it's playing over the correct speakers, and it's playing on your screen, and it's amazing. So that is the GStreamer tutorial from Free Desktop. And that's just the hello world. So there's a lot more to GStreamer tutorials, well worth doing. GST plugins, of which there are several. There's bad, there's base, there's good, there's libav. I think that's all the ones included in Slackware. Yeah, it is. Those add other codecs so that GStreamer can play whatever file types it needs, you need it to play. And that's, for us users, that's the real power, because I don't know about you, but I mean, I end up with all kinds of random media files, and it's really annoying when you click on it, whether or not you recognize the extension, you click on it, you think this is definitely a media file and your computer can't play it. That's annoying. GStreamer can help with that. The plugins for GStreamer add all kinds of functionality to GStreamer, or I guess functionality, or just sort of the ability to recognize media that otherwise it would not potentially recognize. The plugin sets are sort of this weird, like the good, the bad, the ugly thing. The reason for that is like the base is the they're well groomed and well maintained collection of GStreamer plugins and elements spanning the range of possible types of elements one would want to write for GStreamer. That's a weird sentence. It also contains helper libraries and base classes useful for writing other for new elements. So you've got your video and audio decoders, you've got encoders, and several filters apparently. So if you do want to turn something black and white or something, then you can do that. Which is nice. I mean, flexibility is great. The good package has plugins that have been judged to be of good quality, correct functionality, a good license. So they're like LGPL for the plugin code, LPGL or LPGL compatible for supporting library. That's the good package. And then there's the bad, in this case, bad-free. So these are GStreamer bad plugins is a set of plugins that aren't tested well enough, or the code is not of good enough quality enough. They might be close to being good quality, but they're missing something, whether it's just a code review or documentation or whatever. They get relegated to the bad package because they're not considered up to the standards of GStreamer. And the free means that they do have licenses that are okay to ship. Like everyone can ship these things. They're not encumbered by any kind of weird question of patented, liability and stuff like that. And then ugly, I don't remember what that one is. And like I say, it's not included here in Slackware. There's also libav, which contains one plugin with a set of elements using the ffmpeg or libav library code. It contains many popular decoders and encoders. So that's kind of interesting. It's just like literally one set of it's a plugin for one thing. But I imagine that that one thing gives it a heck of a lot. FFmpeg is a really, really powerful library, or rather libAV, I guess, is, or a codec, whatever it is. I get the terminology confused because there was the FFmpeg libAV split for a while. And then what is it? Is it just AV codec? Yeah, that must be what I'm thinking of. Either way, it's a really powerful set of libraries. So I guess probably that one's a really important one to have. And they're all important to have because when you click on some media, you want it to play. And that's what GStreamer is really, really good at. But it's also a great development tool. You know, like you want to ingest video and do something to it. GStreamer is one way you'll be able to do that. It's really, really important. It's a little bit weird because GStreamer is, you know, it's just a C library. So if you're not writing a C application, you do possibly need some kind of interface into GStreamer, or you'll have to write a C library yourself and make it, you know, like make an API for your other language of choice. So that can be a little bit cumbersome if you're not using C. There are good front ends for it, certainly for Python, and I think for Java. Maybe I could be misremembering that, but they're there. It's GStreamer. It's great. And as you could see from the tutorial, it's doing a lot. It's doing a lot of work. Like the fact that you can just grab something off the internet and play it in basically 20 lines of code. It was 27, but I mean, there are a lot, there's a bunch of white space in there. So basically 20 lines of code, you're going out to the internet, you're streaming data from the internet onto your screen in 20 lines of code. That's pretty cool. So check out GStreamer if you're looking to do fun multimedia stuff. Let's talk about GTK Plus for a moment. GTK Plus is the Graphical User Interface Toolkit version 1.x. GTK Plus stands for the GIMP Toolkit, no less. GTK, literally created for an application and sort of gave rise to a desktop and a whole suite of applications for that desktop. It's kind of an amazing story, which I don't have off the top of my head, but it is cool. Look into it sometime. It's a library for creating a graphical user interface for X Window System. This library has mostly been replaced, at least by version 2, but there are still some good programs that require it. So that's why GTK Plus is here. If you ever launch, I don't know what GTK Plus would be used in, probably something like some kind of CVS application or something, or maybe like a media player, like an old media player. If you ever launch one of those, you'll probably possibly see a GTK, original GTK application. It looks, you know, pretty funky, pretty old, pretty 90s-ish, but good. You know, it works. It does the job. And that's GTK Plus. And then there's GTK Plus 2, GTK Plus 3, and GTK 4. I guess they dropped the plus. GTK 4. That's, of course, the hyper-modern one. That's the one. Actually, is it hyper-modern, or are they working on, surely they're probably working on GTK 5 by now. But yeah, GTK 4 is the latest and greatest. It's the one that GNOME is using right now today. So that's going to look, you know, really modern and flashy and, well, subdued, really, for GNOME tends to be relatively subdued, I find. And that's it, GTK 4. So GTK, I mean, that's the Qt of the GNOME world. I mean, it provides things like, well, a window. When you open an application, the reason you have an interface, an application that you can see and click on, is because of GTK. GTK provides things like widgets, like buttons and menus and drop-down menus and combo boxes, like, you know, things that you can enter numbers, you can scroll through numbers on. Sliders, radio buttons, all those little things, all the sort of the little interface conventions that we're used to, something has to provide that. And if something doesn't, then a programmer somewhere has to program it themselves, which is not impossible, but it is burdensome. And in terms of maintenance, it can be difficult because, sure, you might think, oh, I'll just program all this stuff myself. It'll be fun. And it might be fun. You might learn a heck of a lot. But 5 years from now, are you going to really want to keep that code updated all by yourself? Probably not. So you use a framework that a lot of other people are working on. Then you have all of these assets that you can use, and they get updated, so you can add features to your application as features get added to the framework, and so on. So GTK 4, of course, is you know, really sort of modern in feel, modern looking. They tend to put buttons in weird places, and doesn't really make sense to me until you think, well, okay, that button actually on a mobile interface makes a lot of sense up there. And I think we're still in the middle of a push and pull there, where sometimes you think, yeah, this is good. We're moving slowly towards convergence. We're moving the buttons up to the upper, you know, whatever, right-hand corner, left-hand corner, whatever. But then you think, it's really dumb, because I'm looking at this application window, and I look from top to bottom, left to right. And so when I'm finished my journey through this window, the natural place my eye ends up at is the bottom right corner. So sometimes, depending on the context, it seems, especially in GTK, a button might be in the bottom right, because that's kind of where you're ending up, or it might be in the upper left, because that's where one might imagine it would be on a mobile interface. I don't know that we found a comfortable sort of convention there, and like I say, it seems to happen more in the GTK world for some reason. I don't know if that's part of the human interface guidelines that they do, or what, but it is kind of interesting and strange and different. But also, I mean, it kind of feels right in a weird way. I mean, yeah, the interfaces are different. They're notably different. The way that we use the screens of different sizes is, I think, a lot more different than you would possibly think it would be. And yeah, I think we're still discovering that as sort of a species of computer users. Just the fact that in an application, quite possibly just the act of moving your cursor all the way from the bottom right corner, where you've been using the little slider elevator to scroll through a document, all the way up to the upper left, where there's a button to continue, or even to the upper right, that takes a lot of time and effort, and it feels like such a chore to get all the way from here to there. So why put the button there? Why not put it back down there where it belongs? And then why is it that different, like from a desktop screen or a laptop screen and a little phone screen? Well, it's different because the phone screen is like something that you're just thumbing through. You're just controlling literally with your thumb or your forefinger, and the screen is a completely different interface. But there are touch screens now, so maybe that's a little bit something different. Lots of factors, and I think GNOME is kind of on the cutting edge of trying to bridge that gap, at least on Linux. And I'm not sure that that's a comfortable, I don't know if that's a super comfortable place to be. I think that can be a difficult place to be, but they're doing it. They're doing it bravely, and I admire them for what they do. GTK MM2 and GTK MM3. Well, we've already learned that MM is a shorthand in this world for C++, and sure enough, GTK MM is the official C++ interface for the popular GUI library GTK++, and of course there's the GTK MM3 as well for different versions. So if you're programming in C++, then you have an interface in GTK. So I think there's probably a question of why you would choose C++ when you've got all the glib libraries behind C. And I mean, there are lots of reasons, you know, there are lots of features within C++ that might make you choose C++ over C. But I'm wondering if the reason there is such an emphasis on C for GNOME, I mean, aside from legacy, is just because of all the glib features that they have and the gobject stuff. I mean, they've really developed C into a different feeling language than, you know, just pure C. And I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I've never really given GTK much of a thought, to be honest. This is the most I've thought about it, just going through these library files. So yeah, I'm not sure. I wonder how many people are using C++ with the GNOME libraries. I don't know. I don't know. Okay, next up is GTK Source View. This is a framework for source code editing. It's a portable C library that extends the standard GTK Plus framework for multi-line text editing. So this is a little bit like, what is it, K text editor, whatever that one component of the KDE framework was that provides the interface for Kate and for Kwrite and for Kdevelop. You know, that there's that widget, right? That just does it all. And once you know that it exists, you start seeing it in a bunch of different KDE applications, and you're just like, oh, I know that interface. That's the Kate interface. I think it might even be called the Kate part. I could be, but didn't they like break that out? I think they broke that out. Either way, that's what this is, except it's in the GNOME world. It's the GTK source view library. So you could use that. You could crank out a text editor relatively quickly with GTK source view. And the advantage there is just like with Kate, the Kate library thing. You don't have to worry about things like undoing. Like, how do you do the undo? Well, it's already built in. It's in GTK source view. How do you do copy and paste? Or how do I blank the window when I open a new document? All of that stuff is just, it's just options in GTK source view. GTK spell, I'm trying to get through the G's here. GTK, and we're very, very close. GTK spell is it's a highlighting library for misspelled words within GTK text view widget. So you right click on it, it pops up a menu of suggested replacements, and you've got built-in spell check, which is huge. People won't use it, but it's huge. I mean, that's such a luxury on a computer. My goodness, that's so nice. And then finally, last but not least, is the GVFS. That's the glib virtual file system. And this is a user space virtual file system designed to work with the IO abstraction of libgio. I don't really know where this appears on Slackware, but on the GNOME desktop, if you ever have a chance to use it, you can open up the files application and then go to the sort of, other places option over on the left panel. You click on that, and then at the bottom of your file manager window, there's a little form that you could fill out, or is it a drop-down menu? It's a drop-down menu, I think. And you can choose what protocol you want to use to get to some other file system. So this is where you would go to access an NFS share or a Samba share or another computer on your network. So if you have SSH ability onto, you know, if you're on your laptop and you want to SSH to your server, you go to other places or other locations, whatever they call it, and then you would select maybe SFTP. It's, I don't know why it's SFTP and not just like SSH, but I guess maybe because on KDE you just use FISH, which is like file system over SSH or something like that. But I guess, or at least you did. Do you just use? I think either way, I think it's technically using FISH on the back end. But on GNOME, yeah, you just use SFTP. But it's a super, like, don't be put off by the archaic FTP part there. It's really nice. It's really fluid. You SSH into your computer, your server, or whatever, and suddenly, like, your file manager is, and it, so it basically it mounts as if though it's a file system. It becomes a mount over on the left panel of your file manager. You can click on that and you see all your folders there. You can open documents transparently. You'll never know that it's on another computer. It works a treat. I do it all the time. I've got my desktop in my office, but sometimes I go out into the lounge with my laptop, especially in the winter when it's really, really cold. I go out there by the fireplace and just sit on my laptop. I don't sit on my laptop. I sit by the fire with my laptop in my lap, and I access my desktop over this GNOME file other places virtual file system. It becomes a virtual file system in my file manager. I can open up PDFs, I can open up EPUBs, I can open up text documents in Emacs and edit them, save them right back to the system from which they came. Absolutely transparent. It's really, really nice. I mean, no nicer than the same thing on KDE. I'm just saying it works. It works as you would hope it to work. And that's a virtual file system because it's not really, it's not actually accessing that file system. It's not mounting that file system the way that a root user would attach the file system and all that. This is a fuse-based virtual file system that is hot pluggable. You mount it as if though it's basically a USB thumb drive, but it's not really. It's doing all that through some protocol. That's GVFS. And yeah, it's priceless. It's really, really useful. Sometimes you'll need to install, you know, protocol like drivers for file systems. That is something to be aware of. Haven't had to do it on Slackware, but on other things, sometimes a driver for a file system won't be compiled into your kernel, won't be loaded, whatever. You might have to install it. So if you ever get an error on another distro related to that, it's probably the file system driver. Otherwise, GVFS is, yeah, really, really nice, really useful. All right, and that's all the Gs. That's all the G section in the library division of the Slackware packages, which is actually really exciting because there were a lot of them with all the... all the GTK stuff. I just feel like that was quite a lot. So next episode, we'll do the H's, and I think we'll actually get through all of the H's, and then onto the I's and, you know, the alphabet stuff. So that's it, I think, for this episode. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.